like to be the first? What's it like to be spiritual? What's it like to be religious? A lot of questions. Some ponderable, some imponderable. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the ponderables and the imponderables, as well as everything in between. This is episode number 493 of The Next Step, and we're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our 10th year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life. Since 2008, these next steps have been taken toward and for the disenfranchised members of the church community, as well as for those searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, as well as for the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
One of my favorite books is called Imponderables. It's one of those books that you read in passing, you know, maybe a little bit every day. A few chapters is enough, you know. Imponderables. I think they came out with a series of them. They're basically the solution to the mysteries of everyday life. You know, things that you just wonder why. Like, for instance, why is the color blue associated with baby boys and pink with baby girls? Who made that connection? That blue was for boys and pink was for girls. Imponderable, right? The meaning to the everyday mysteries. Like, what's the difference between the forecast when they say partly cloudy and partly sunny? You believe there's an answer for that? I mean, it's a list of imponderables that they give answers to. Why can't you ever buy fresh sardines in a fish market? Yeah, you know, like, what if sardines come in a can? And if you go to the fish market, you look for sardines. No, there, you know what? There's no such thing. But they're in a can, aren't they? Imponderable, yeah. I mean, there's a whole list of these things, too. You know, why do cornflakes and sugar-frosted flakes have the same number of calories per serving? Yeah, one's filled with sugar, but calories per serving. I mean, it's really wild. Let me read a few of these, okay? Why do we itch? Why do people look up when they're thinking? Where do they get that awful music for ice skating? A big question, you know. What causes the holes in Swiss cheese? Imponderable. Well, you ponder it, right? You think about it. And of course, there's degrees and severities of imponderables, right? There's things that have to do with the universe, with the formation, and then simple things like, why do women open their mouths when applying mascara? Is there an answer? Well, of course there is. And Imponderables is this book. And in fact, I remember that, this isn't something new, this came out many, many years ago. And I remember there was a whole series of these books. Like I said, it's fascinating. You read one or two answers, it's enough for the day, right? Imponderables. But it gets you thinking. You know, and I always like these kind of books that allow you to think a little bit about things that you otherwise wouldn't think about. Like, one of the big mysteries, you know, is like our eating habits, for instance, you know. I mean, it's pretty easy. Like, what made us eat a banana, for instance? What made somebody say, hey, there's a fruit inside of that skin, that yellow skin, and I bet you it tastes good. So let's peel away the skin and see what's inside and eat it. Well, that one probably, you know, we got our clue from some animal, maybe a monkey, something. We saw somebody else, some other species do it, and we said, hey, maybe if it's good enough for the monkey, you know, maybe it's okay for us. Probably the first humans that, you know, took the skin off of a banana were inspired by a lower form of life here on Earth. You don't know. It's possible, right? It's an imponderable, but you think about it. Or whatever made people or inspired people to, say, make the first hamburger. You ever thought about it? Somebody had to think about, let's take that cow that's standing over there, let's grind it up, and then let's make a patty out of it and put it inside of two pieces of bread. Well, of course, there's an evolutionary process, isn't there? We evolved, probably. I don't know. The imponderable is that probably there was some kind of forest fire. There was some kind of fire somewhere. And some animal got cooked in that fire, and the first man smelled it and said, hey, this smells good. Let's give it a shot. I don't know, but it's very possible, right? It's an imponderable. You start thinking about it. And I always like thinking about the first, because in my case, there is a saint that I identify with. And you know, I've spoken about this in the past, about our need to identify with saints a little bit more than we do, because the saints are examples for us. And the one saint that I identify with, and actually I refer to him as my patron saint, in other words, somebody that I look up to is giving me the inspiration and being an example for me, is Saint Andrew. Saint Andrew in the Armenian church is called Nakhagoch, which basically means the first called. And throughout Christendom, he is known as the first called disciple. And I always think about that. What it must have been like to be the first one called by Jesus Christ. You want an imponderable? There you go. What is it like to be called by Christ, to be the first follower of Jesus Christ, when it means that there is nobody else? You are the first. You are the absolute first. Just like the first person who figured out how to eat a banana, the first one who figured out that we need to cook meat, you're the first. You're called by Jesus Christ. What's on your shoulders at that point? What do you need to do? In the Gospel of John, we read the story of the first disciples of Jesus. Actually, it's in the first chapter of John. Let me read it for you, okay? It says, the next day John, this is John the Baptist he's referring to. John the Evangelist is writing about John the Baptist. It says, the first day John again was standing with two of his disciples. And as he watched Jesus walk by, he exclaimed, look, here is the Lamb of God. The two disciples heard him say this, and they followed Jesus. When Jesus turned and saw them following, he said to them, what are you looking for? They said to him, Rabbi, or which means teacher, where are you staying? He said to them, come and see. They came and saw where he was staying, and they remained with him that day. It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. One of the two who heard John speak and followed him was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. He first found his brother Simon and said to him, we have found the Messiah, which is translated anointed. He brought Simon to Jesus, who looked at him and said, you are Simon, son of John. You are to be called Cephas, which is translated Peter. Now this is the calling of the first disciple, the first follower of Jesus Christ, the Nakhagoch, the first called, Andrew. And what does he do? Right away, he goes out and he brings his brother into the picture. Now, I want us to ponder a little bit. I want us to think about, what does that mean? What does it mean to be the first called? What does it mean when you don't have an example to follow? And I'm sure you've done this in your own life. If you've been adventurous, you've taken some steps that perhaps other people haven't taken. And you know that it's a lonely place. It's a lonely place to be the first. Because what do you have right away? You have opposition, don't you? You have people who question. What are you doing? They question your basic sanity. What do you mean you're following somebody named Jesus? Yesterday you were following John, and today you're following Jesus. What's the story here? What do you mean you're cooking meat? I mean, wasn't it enough that we'd go out there and we'd hunt these animals? Now you're saying we've got to cook them.
Of course. You're going to get all kinds of people asking you questions like, what are you doing? Well, such is the case with Saint Andrew. With Andrew, the first called, the first disciple of Jesus Christ.
You know, it's difficult. And it's difficult to be a pioneer. It's difficult to be the first one. Because you have to be thick-skinned. You have to be able to be confident in what you're doing. You're a pioneer. You're charting uncharted areas. Right? You're creating the map. You're putting down the business plan for what you're doing. This was the experience of Saint Andrew. Here is a man named Jesus. This all he was to Andrew. This was Jesus who was identified by John as the Lamb of God. But still, you're going on faith alone. Your teacher, John, has told you this is the Lamb of God. You're going on faith alone. You're going to follow him. And he follows him. A revolutionary. A preacher of a different level. Talking about things that no one else has ever talked about. Certainly at that time, in Andrew's immediate circle of people, nobody was talking about what Jesus was talking about. The kingdom is here right now. It's enacted. In your presence, the kingdom of God is at hand. Now, Andrew, it says Andrew's brother was Peter. Now, Peter, we know, is a fisherman. What kind of people are fishermen? Basically, people of the earth, right? People who use their strength, their human powers to make a living. Basically rough people. And here Andrew goes to his brother Peter, the fisherman, and says, I found him. I found the Christ, the anointed one. And I'm following him. And Peter follows. Andrew becomes the reason for this tough guy, Peter, to drop down his nets. And as Jesus calls him, he says, you're no longer a fisher of fish, but you're a fisher of men. I will call you Peter. And so now Peter follows Jesus. And as the saying goes, the rest is history, right? And we know that there was 12 of them that followed Jesus. And so begins the early Christian church. With Peter making his statements, going into prison and rallying the disciples, going out there and becoming an apostle for Jesus Christ. All because Andrew had the courage to stand up and take a chance and experiment. Uncharted area. You see, being the first, you don't get the support that is necessary. That is so necessary when starting something. I mean, today we have what's called venture capitalist, right? They go and they listen to your spiel. And if you say, hey, you know, this is what my business is. Here's my business plan. This is the way that I feel like I could make money. And this is how I can return the funds that you are lending me. I mean, you know, let's follow the metaphor of the fisherman, right? There's a popular show out there called Shark Tank. What do? They listen to your spiel. And you're the first one thinking of something. And they listen to what you're saying. And at the end of that, they make a decision. Should we follow you? Should we invest in you? Or do we just say, hey, good idea, not for us? And that's the chance that Andrew took. He's following Jesus Christ. Nobody else is following him. And it's a big chance. You have to feel confident in yourself because you may get people who will say like, well, that's good for you, but I'm not buying into it. But when people do buy into it, when people do follow him, they're getting the return of their life. Literally, the return of their life. They're getting eternity. Wow. and Andrew's responsible for that. Now, it's not only being a pioneer, it's not only having the courage, but it's also to be outcast. Outcast from by your peers, by your friends. Hey, don't look too far. We don't need to go down 2,000 years. Think about in your own life. When you try to express yourself as a Christian, when you say that I want to follow Jesus Christ, you know the snickering that goes on. You know how people look at you, like, oh, what is, yeah, that's cute. And Andrew was the first called. It comes with a higher level. It's a proportion, right? It's a proportionality. The closer you are to the time of Christ, the more vulnerable you're going to be, the more opportunities there are going to be for people to put you down. Because now, hey, you know, like it or not, in the world there's about 2 billion Christians. And all different kinds of Christians, right? All different kinds of followings. But they all basically connect to somebody named Jesus Christ. So you're in some kind of a company. But you're the first? That's a difficult thing. So there's two things that Andrew's noted for. And like I said, I've taken this to heart. He's my personal saint, or what we call patron saint. I relate to him. So two things I want you to remember that Andrew is noted for. First of all, he was a risk taker. It's okay to take risks. You don't need to buy into new fads and everything like that. Andrew gave you the first example. He was a risk taker. Knowing what's out there, knowing the difficulties, he took that risk. And the second thing, he introduced people to Christ. That's what he did. Throughout Holy Scripture, when you read it, what does he do? Let's dissect it, okay? He takes these risks and he follows Jesus. When you follow the example of Andrew, Jesus was an unknown, but he spoke to Andrew's heart. And that was a real criteria in his life, just like in our lives. There are things that speak to us. Other people might not understand it, but it's up to you to take that risk. To take that risk and saying, you know what? It's speaking to my heart. God is speaking to my heart. I'm going to try it. I'm going to try it. And then once he does try it, and once he knows that this is what he wants to follow, he's brave enough. He's brave enough to share what he has learned. And we see this. Just a few minutes ago, I read from John, right, where he says that he introduces his brother Peter. Andrew is also the same one. If you read the gospel narratives of the feeding of the 5,000, it's Andrew who introduces the young boy to Jesus Christ, the boy who has the fish and loaves. Andrew is the one who brings the paraplegic to Jesus. And later on in his life, we see that post-resurrection, we see that Andrew introduces the people of Scotland, the people of India. He preaches all the way into India. And in fact, do you know what his cross is? It's shaped like an X. The X cross, the X. When you see icons of Andrew, we'll try to put one up on today's show notes. The icon of Saint Andrew is it always includes the X-shaped cross because in fact, that's where he was martyred. That's how he was martyred. He was crucified on an X-shaped cross. So these are the two characteristics of Andrew that I want you to take away with you today. Being the first means that you take a risk. Second, once you take that risk and you understand the beauty of God and what God is talking to you about, how he talks to your heart, don't be scared to take it out and introduce others to it. Now, why do I bring this up today? Well, guess what? You didn't need to guess. You have a calendar, don't you? In the Armenian church, this Saturday is the feast day of Saint Andrew and Saint Philip. And in fact, there is one Armenian church in the entire world that is named after this saint, Saint Andrew in Armenian, Surp Antreas, and that is in Cupertino, California. Cupertino, yes, it's famous for your Mac computers, for the headquarters of Apple Computers. Apple iPhones, yes. It's also the place where you will find St. Andrew Armenian Church. I'm going to be there this Sunday, looking forward to celebrating the Divine Liturgy on the feast day of St. Andrew. And I'm looking forward to seeing so many friends and people that I haven't seen for a long time. But most importantly, it's an opportunity for me to renew my vow, a vow to the example of St. Andrew. That yes, you know, it's difficult to be the first. There is criticism, but be focused. Know that what you're doing, it is a calling. It's not a job. Yes, throughout my history as a priest, because of this saint, I was pushed, the first one to bring women into the church, actually a deaconess in the church here in America. Yes, we have that history. The first one to change Martyrs' Day from a day of mourning to a day of celebration for what we have by offering to other people. These were not easy projects. Those of you who've been with me on the next step that have followed the In His Shoes Ministries, I don't want to ever let you believe that it's an easy battle. And sometimes in other areas, people say, well, you know, we wanted to start an In His Shoes, but it's not easy. No, it isn't easy. We've paid our dues. But at the end of it, when you do pay your dues, you need to do the second portion of what St. Andrew did. And that is basically introduce it to people. Introduce it and offer it. You're going to have criticism. And it's not because they're mean people, mean-spirited. It's just that it's new. It's just like what I shared with you at the beginning. The first guy who made the hamburger was not easy to sell other people on it. And you know what? Sometimes you do fail. Like, I'm sure that, okay, they were okay when they peeled the first banana, but there was probably another fruit that they peeled open, and there was poison inside, and some people died, right? But it's taking that risk. And when it speaks to your heart, you know that that's a language that maybe you understand. And it's up to you to go and sell it to other people, to share it with other people, to offer it to other people. And that's what St. Andrew did. That's his inspiration. That's the example that he leaves. And I wanted to share it with you, my listeners, on this feast day of St. Andrew. We'll take a break right now for the song of the day. And we will be back in just a few moments, okay? Song I picked out today, ironically, Fish Don't Scream. You think about the irony there, according to what we were just talking about. Fish Don't Scream, it is off of the Jazz is Christ album. And it's a collaboration with Serge Tankian and Dikran Hamasyan. And playing on the flute is Valery Tolstov. Enjoy. Thank you. Fish Don't Scream is the name of that song. It comes off of the Jazz is Christ album, and it's a collaboration of Serge Tankian, Dikran Hamasyan, and on the flute is Valery Tolstov. Playing the trumpet is Tom Dupree. How about that? Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. It's a wonderful album, Jazz is Christ. I highly recommend it. There'll be a link on today's show notes. I highly recommend that you listen to the rest of it, too. There is a song on there that is so catchy. I mean, I was humming it and singing it all last night. It's called Miso Soup. I won't play it, not for today, but on another day, we'll definitely play it. Just a wonderful song that gets you thinking about, not only miso soup, is it non-gluten or gluten-free, but it's an opportunity to come together in understanding, from what I understand, okay? Anyway, hope you enjoyed today's Song of the Day. Do look at the show notes today. There'll be a link to that music as well as all the other great tunes that are on that album. Miso soup, miso soup. We both like miso soup. Okay, you played it anyway, huh? Miso soup. That's the jingle I was telling you about, okay? I couldn't get it out of my head, much to the disappointment of my family. I just kept singing it over and over. It's a catchy little jingle, isn't it? We'll play it on another day, but definitely worth the download, as I said a few minutes ago. Do check it out on our show notes. But during the break, we were talking about this entire idea of being the first, of the example that St. Andrew gives us. And a good point Kedden makes, he says that it's just so much easier today. I don't think that anybody would have that problem when it comes to Christianity. Absolutely. I agree. Right now, you can stand up and you're not going to be alone. But think about what we're talking about when we talk about Armodoxy. It is really revolutionary. It is something brand new. Basically, it's brand new because the world hasn't understood it. When you think about what we present over here as Armodoxy, in other words, the essence of what Christianity is about, strip away the hoopla and understand that Christ was here to serve and to serve us peace, peace in this world. In a few weeks, we're going to be celebrating Christmas. It starts off with a message of the angels saying, peace on earth. That's how Christmas starts, right? Christ is born, peace on earth. And when Christ leaves in his farewell discourse, what does he say? He says, peace I leave you. It's so remarkable that when you look at the entire life of Christ on earth, when you look at the ministry of Jesus, it's sandwiched in these two expressions of peace. And so do we have a message that needs to be heralded, that needs to be told to people? And yes, people will laugh at you. They will mock you. They will say, no, peace isn't attainable that way. The only way to have peace is you have to be stronger than the other guy. And Jesus says just the opposite. Not only love your neighbors, but love your enemies and pray for them that persecute you. Now, you talk about revolutionary. You talk about a message that people are going to mock you for. Tell me that isn't new. Yeah, Jesus said it 2,000 years ago, but have we ever applied it to our lives? I think there is a unique history out there. When you look at the history of the Armenian Church, it has delivered on that message of peace. So there's the challenge, okay? Think of it in those terms. Yeah, it's the imponderable. You're right. Love your enemies. That is an imponderable, yes. So start from there and think about it. But that's not where I wanted to go during the second half of today's show. I wanted to talk about this article that appeared in Catholic News Services. It's about spiritual but not religious. I know you've heard it. I've been asked about it. So many people come and proclaim it as their way of life. I am spiritual, but I am not religious. Oh, I believe in the spiritual things. But you know what? I'm not religious. Don't count on me to go to church. Don't do that. And you know what? To be honest with you, I was just thinking about that. The reason why I wanted to bring it up was because we just had our Catholicos come. And if you've belonged to any Armenian church, and I won't speak for other churches, but I'll talk about the Armenian church. you know that you've heard this expression many times, where these incredible entrepreneurs are cited as being these people who have taken risk, essentially, as being the ultimate, being the examples for us. And three of them come to mind because I've heard it so often, and I just heard it recently, too. One is Kirk Kerkorian, in other words, this entrepreneur who made billions of dollars, and his parents were genocide survivors. There's Charles Eisenhower, who is known internationally for his voice and for the beauty that he's added to life. And William Saroyan, here's another one too. And it's interesting because they always get these three, and there's a few others out there too. I shouldn't say it's only these three. There's these three that come out as shining examples of, look, the phoenix rising out of the ashes. We were people of genocide, and hey, look at us today. And look at us today is okay, but don't claim these as the people who will bring you to a pious life, right? And I'm not going to speak for their spiritual life. I don't know anything about them. But I will tell you one thing about them, that they're not people who had gone to the Armenian Church or had been patrons of the Armenian Church or were part of the Armenian Church. But somehow they get thrown out there, the Saroyan, Kerkorian, Osnovor, they get thrown out there. Hey, look, these are the shining examples. Well, they're examples of entrepreneur. They're examples of people who took risk. They're examples of people who, after the pains of genocide, have been able to stand up. But they're definitely not people that you see in church on Sunday, right? Or you've seen in church, right? So when a church leader cites them as the examples, what is the church leader saying? He's saying that basically church attendance is not important. That's it. Church attendance is not important to become this great person. And you know what? Here's the truth of it. No, it isn't. Church attendance, you don't go to church to become a great person. But going to church is part of that religiousness that I want to talk about that's absent from our discussions these days, because so many people, it's gotten cliche. I am spiritual, but I am not religious. And we throw out the baby with the bathwater, so to speak, when we discount religion, because religion is a structure. It has a way of allowing us to focus. And that focus in our life is really the essence of true success. When you're able to focus on something, that's when you find the success in your life. And it doesn't matter. We just heard a song, Serge Tankian. He focused in on music, right? Whether it's Charles Osnovor, William Saroyan, right? Writing. That was his focus, right? Even a Kerkorian, I mean, to make that kind of money, you had to be focused, you had to be disciplined, right? And isn't that what religion really gives us? It's that discipline. Speaking of Kerkorian, I shared this with you a few months ago when we saw the movie The Promise. I mean, it was very moving. I liked it. I know there was some criticism, but I really liked it. I thought, what other way can you get this story out? I mean, imagine a non-Armenian is paying money to go see a movie about genocide. Well, you've got to figure out a way to get him to pay, to part with his bucks to see that, and they certainly did that. But I remember sharing this with you, that probably the most moving part for me was in the credits when I saw Kirk Kerkorian's name. I went to tears. And you know what? I'm not a big Kirk Kerkorian fan, but I do know his story. I do know that he bought MGM. I know what he went through to get the story of Musadal out there. He actually bought a studio. He tried to get the 40 days of Musadal up on the big screen, and he couldn't. And here it was 2 years after his death. He fulfilled his promise, didn't he? His promise. And he got that story out there. That's discipline. That's being focused. And religion really does that. It gives us the structure that we need. Sometimes when we talk about spirituality, you know, we're all spiritual beings. Every one of us, you know, comes into the world with some basic questions like, where did we come from? Where are we going? What are we doing with this life? Those basic answers. And so in this article, let me share a little bit of this article with you. It comes from Catholic News Services. It says, it's almost reached the level of cliche in American society. You ask someone why they don't go to church and they reply, oh, I'm spiritual, but not religious. But what does that mean? A survey conducted jointly by the Public Religion Research Institute and Florida State University does not provide hard and fast answers, but it offers clues. Without asking respondents directly whether they considered themselves spiritual but not religious, or at any other spot on the spirituality-religiosity spectrum, the survey tried to tease out what made them different from their fellow Americans. And the article goes on, and I'll put a link on today's show notes. You could read the article. Interesting reading. But what I want to share with you is this whole idea, notion of why we go to church. And I think that that's another one of those misunderstandings that people have, especially because we go to churches that have pews. Now, don't forget, in Armenian Orthodoxy, in Armenian churches, there are no pews in the ancient world. Pews are basically an addition of comfort that we added many years later. We learned from the West. But when you go to church, it's an opportunity for you to focus. If you've ever done any Zen meditation, Buddhist meditation, you know that they tell you that you don't sit in a chair to do that meditation, right? Interesting, right? You don't do Zen meditation in a chair. You sit in lotus posture, you sit on the floor, and you become one with your senses and all that is around you. And it's interesting because that's exactly the point of church. And I use this word meditation a lot without fear. I think a lot of times people get very uncomfortable with the word meditation within Christian circles. They think that meditation somehow connotes that we're not praying. It's not about praying. It's not about meditation. It's about the focus. It's about where your head is at. It's about losing yourself. When Jesus says, he who wants to follow me, let him pick up his cross. What is he saying? He's saying, lose yourself. That cross is the suffering. It's the symbol of sacrifice. Dedicating yourself to a greater good. He who loves his life will lose it, and he who hates his life will keep it for eternal life. What is Christ talking about? That we should go and beat ourselves and hate ourselves? No. The hate, a very harsh word, but appropriately placed there, right? It's about the idea of serving something beyond yourself. And this is what we don't do. And this is what church can do. When we say we are spiritual but not religious, we're falling into the same trap about, I'm here for myself. I want to be spiritually fed. Don't think of church in those terms. Think of going to church as your release, as the place where you drop everything. And I know it's difficult, given the circumstances. Our churches today, unfortunately, we've picked up so much from the Western understanding of church buildings that we've lost that monastic feel. Some churches are good. Some, if you go, for instance, in Armenia, go into a church like Kerepsime, even Etchmiadzin, you know, go into Etchmiadzin. There's no pews in there. You just have this opportunity to lose yourself. Of course, it's difficult because there's so much distraction around you. But you know what? In life, there is distraction all around you. All around you, there's distraction. And even for the Buddhist monk who is practicing his meditation, it's very easy to be distracted, not only by the surroundings, but by the thought process that comes into your head. If you've tried to pray, if you've tried to meditate, where you close yourself off, what does Jesus say? When you pray, find a small room and close yourself off from everything else. What is that about? It's about being focused. It's about eliminating the distractions. And you know what? That's one of the problems that we have. It takes time. It takes concentration. It takes an effort to get to that point. We don't want to put that time. We don't want to invest that time. That's why it's so much easier to be spiritual and not religious. It's convenient, right? And you know what? There's nothing wrong with convenience. If that's your, that's what you want, that's fine. But you have an opportunity to grow. You could say I'm spiritual, but are you growing spiritually? And what I'm here to say is that that religiousness, that opportunity to work within that structure, to be able to focus in, to have a set mantra, so to speak. When you go, for instance, I mean, you know, I'm using some Eastern words right now, and I know those of you who are new might not know where I'm going. Listen to some of my older stuff, okay? I mean, don't get scared. Don't get turned off by words. I use them freely because I do believe that we're all interconnected. And each of these speak to our tradition. And our tradition? It's the human tradition. It's what God created. Human beings. We're all in this together. It's what it means to be a human. To be here on this earth. To be able to work with one another. To live in harmony. The human tradition. And so I don't shy away from using some of these words. A mantra. What is a mantra? You know, oh, we've heard this. Well, yeah, it comes from Buddhism. It comes from Hinduism. Let me see here. A mantra. This is the actual definition, okay? A word or sound repeated to aid concentration in meditation. A statement or slogan repeated frequently. And if you've done meditation, you know, you have this mantra and you repeat it and you repeat it until you can get to that point of emptiness. Does that sound familiar? Could you hear somebody say in these traditions, well, my mantra's the same every day. It's the same. No, they wouldn't say that, but we do that with our Bhavarak, with our divine liturgy. It's the same. Every week I go, it's the same. Well, guess what? That's our mantra. It's a beautiful mantra. It's a place that flows, that's completely holistic. So when you get into the divine liturgy, the Bhavarak, what do you have? All of your senses at play. You smell the incense with your nose. You hear the music with your ears. You see the brightness and the beauty with your eyes. You feel with your hands and your heart as you engage in the kiss of peace. And then you participate through your sense of taste. Holistic, all the way. And it's a mantra that is repeated every week. Yeah, I'm spiritual. I'm not religious. I can't go to church service. Okay, that's fine. You know, say whatever you want, but religion has its purpose. And it's basically to give us that structure, to give us the means by which we empty out. You see, in meditation, that's what the bottom line is, to empty yourself from all the surrounding influences, from everything that's around you. That's the purpose of the Divine Liturgy. When you come to the Divine Liturgy, to the Bhavarak, you start off with Horin and you start absorbing all of these. And when you're truly in the Divine Liturgy, everything else is out. Everything is emptied out. And what happens when that emptiness is inside of us? It needs to be filled. And it fills with love. It fills with the presence of God. And that ultimately is the purpose of church, to give you a place where you can empty out and fill up with God. So you go once a week and it's your recharge. It's the battery recharge. Now, there's a lot of stuff in what I just said because of the familiarity that we have with church practices. And we say, well, we can't do that. You know, I mean, I get to church and there's 5 minutes left and then you do the requiem. No, I'm not talking about that. You need to go beyond the mechanics and start understanding it in the terms of beginning, middle, and end. An opportunity to flow in this space where you give up the deceits of the world, the difficulties of the world. And so, coming back to this statement, I am spiritual but not religious. Let me throw it out to you this way. I'm spiritual because I'm religious. In other words, the more religious you get, the more spiritual you can be when you exercise the practices of your religion. Your religion gives you that foundation. Definitely in Armodoxy, that's what it's about. It's that foundation. When we say go to church, it's not about, oh, if you don't go to church, God is going to hate you. It's not about if you don't go to church, God is going to punish you. No, that's not what it's about. It's an opportunity for you to lose yourself, for you to understand that there's something greater than yourself. And there are spaces. I tell you, this morning, actually, I was at St. Leon Cathedral. I think that is one of the, here in Los Angeles area, it is one of the most sacred spaces that the Armenian Church has. When you go in there, it's huge, it's massive, but you do lose yourself. You lose yourself to something bigger than yourself. And there are churches all around you. Find them and you will find the presence of God will come inside of you. There's a cathedral actually just here in Los Angeles, the Cathedral of the Angels, Our Lady of the Angels. It's the Roman Catholic Cathedral. Same kind of experience. You get in there and you walk with the saints in there and you find a little space over there and it's overwhelming because you truly lose yourself. There's a few other places like that that I've experienced. One I remember in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We were there several years ago, and I wish I had caught the name of that church. But it was a very sacred, sacred space. And I know in Armenia, when we go to the sacred spaces such as Sanahin, or where you go to Noravank, and you're completely inside one of these churches for service, and you hear the echoes of the voices, not the voices singing, but the echoes of the past that start reverberating with your heart, not with the drums inside of your ear, but with your heart, and you realize that there is something bigger. It's at that point you realize the purpose and the goal and the reason for religion. I know people say, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. Be careful when you say that. That's all I'm challenging you to. There is a place for everything. And certainly religion, with all of its negatives, is certainly outweighed by all of the positives. Okay, speaking of mantras, here's Susie with her mantra. I'll be back in a few moments, okay?
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the 10th year of producing shows, which are heard around 6 continents. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armodoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And I have a few announcements, too. I want you to mark on your calendars a few important dates. If you're in the Los Angeles area, we're going to be starting a new venture. It's called a Teen Bible Study. It's really more than Bible study. It's an opportunity to question faith, to give some answers to the basic questions that a lot of young people have. We're going to be starting that program through In Issues Ministries on December 1st in the Los Angeles area. And a big shout out to the Dakesian family who are opening up their home for this very special program that will be beginning on December 1st and continuing on a weekly basis. Also, keep on your calendar, January 13, through 15. That is Martin Luther King Jr. Weekend. And every year we do a very special retreat, a very special event, and this year is going to be no different. This year we're going to be up at Zaka Lake. It happens to be up on the California coast between Los Angeles and San Francisco. Definitely, if you are in the area, if you're not, buy, steal, cheat a ticket to be in the area and join us for that retreat. Also, place on your calendar some important dates. In May, I'm going to be leading a pilgrimage to Armenia to go to Sardarabad and some of the different kind of venues, different from the usual fare of pilgrimage sites. And then in July, young people, we're going to be converging again once in Armenia. We're looking for an international collection of young people from all over, international, to be there and to share a few days of joy together and continuing on a pilgrimage through Armenia. So a lot of stuff coming up. And you say, well, you know, what is all this? Like, can I travel? Yeah, you can travel. You can do it. You can get out there and you can be with us. If there's a will, there's a way. I've heard that. And sometimes I question it, but I've heard that and I'm throwing it out to you. Anyway, that does it for our show today. I want to invite you to get in touch with us at all the usual spots, at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Join us at the mothership inissues.org. I know, again, this week we got a few people calling up. They were backed up on their podcast and they complained about episode number 491. That was the one that was kind of off. An email came out that directed people to different places. And yes, we are aware of it. It has been fixed. But always go to the mothership, inhisshoes.org. Check out the link there. And it is the most current, and you will have the most latest podcast, as well as all the other podcasts that we've put out there. Also at epostle.net. Hey, we're just all over the place. Anyway, I want to thank you for joining us. Please keep us in your prayers. There's some really big things happening in our lives over here, and we need your prayers. We're coming on Thanksgiving this next week. If you have an opportunity to share the blessings that God has given you in your life, take advantage of that opportunity. Give to people, share with one another, share with brothers and sisters who have no way of giving back to you. That is the message that Jesus Christ gives us. That's the message that we live by and we share with you. Happy St. Andrew Day. And I look forward to being at St. Andrew Armenian Church this Sunday for the Holy Divine Liturgy holistically and in all forms. Yes, imponderable. We had a lot to ponder today. On behalf of the wonderful crew who brought the show to you today, Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vasquez, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the Thanksgiving next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
To ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are.